Good evening, everyone. You're in the right place at the right time. This is Coast to Coast AM, blasting out of the Mojave Desert like a Scirocco, blazing across the land, into your town, into your home, slamming into your radio like a supercharged nanoparticle of unobtainium. Greetings from the boldest, bawdiest, most outrageous city in the world, the planetary capital of sun, fun, sin, sex, and secrets, my not-so-humble hometown, Las Vegas, Nevada. My name is George Knapp, your occasional host, your designated driver of the airwaves, and moderator of tonight's upcoming cacophony of conversation. Glad to be back with you once again. As loyal listeners, you know that we love our conspiracies here on Coast to Coast AM. I think tonight's main subject qualifies as a conspiracy, and I mean it could actually be several types of conspiracy and on several levels. It's the so-called war on drugs. Some war. I mean, if this was a boxing match, the ref would have called it a long time ago. What a colossal, indisputable failure this war has been. The U.S. has spent something over $1 trillion to try and stop the flow of illegal substances, to stop people from consuming these substances, to put them in jail when they don't comply. And yet, I will bet, no matter where you live right now, you could go out and score illegal drugs, many different kinds, in an hour or less and have no trouble at all. The dead giveaway is this on how well this thing has worked. Law enforcement says that the typical street price of drugs, cocaine, meth, heroin, are stable. In fact, the prices are pretty low, which means all this enforcement, all the people rotting in prison, all that's been done in this war hasn't put a dent in the drug problem, because if they were stopping it from coming in, the price would go up. Is it a conspiracy? Well, I mean, put it this way, I will bet the drug cartels themselves are the biggest supporters of the war on drugs. They sure as hell don't want drugs to be legalized or decriminalized, because that would take away the profit motive behind their trafficking empires. And without those huge profits, there would be less incentive for violence, the kind that has turned Mexico into a bloody shooting gallery. There is strong evidence, as listeners to this program know, that our intelligence agencies, American agencies like the CIA, have used illegal drug smuggling to finance all sorts of operations conducted outside the scope of the law, outside the Constitution, outside the scrutiny of Congress or the American public. Drugs have created entire industries, and that's where our prisons have become in many ways. It's a punishment industry where tens of thousands of jobs depend on staying tough on drugs. Oh yeah, we're so tough on drugs, that even in our toughest prisons, which is the most repressive, the most scrutinized, tied down environment we could devise, inmates can still get drugs on demand. They can get whatever they want. And if we can't stop drugs in prison, how do we stop it on the streets of a free society? Coming up in hour two of tonight's program, an outspoken lawman who has dared to defy conventional wisdom on this topic, to declare that the emperor has no clothes. His name is Judge Jim Gray, and he'll be here to talk about the war on drugs, why it has failed, who benefits from continuing it, and what we should be doing instead, assuming we'd ever be allowed to try an approach other than the so-called war. Judge Jim Gray joins me in the next hour, and I am confident you'll be stimulated by the straight talk he's going to lay on us. I'm going to take this break, come back, get into some of the news of the day, the latest on the BP oil spill, as well as Knapp's news picks. Webmaster Lex and I have plucked some ripe fruit from the news wires over the past week or so, and we will be going to the phone lines right away to find out what's on your mind tonight. We'll get to all that and more right after this on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast to Coast. I'm George Knapp. We'll be going to the phones in just a couple of minutes, so if you have something on your mind, get ready to call us. 1 week ago tonight, I was on an airplane heading back from Washington, D.C. after attending and speaking at a thing called the X Conference, which we talked about on the program. It was held this year at the National Press Club, which is a pretty cool place to hold this event. And as conferences go, it was a good one. Our colleague George Norrie from Coast to Coast was there and was a big hit with the audience, as always. Also on hand, our colleagues Linda Moulton Howe, Rich Dolan, Paul Stonehill, both of them have been guests on the program with me and are solid researchers. And of course, the general theme of the X Conference, the goal of the organization behind the conference, is disclosure. Disclosure about UFOs, what the government might know. And while I certainly support the concept and have fought for the public's right to know over the years on this and other topic, I have always said that maybe we should be careful what we wish for. Disclosure. Disclosure of what? We're not quite sure about the ultimate answers to any of the big questions. Who or what is visiting us? What do they want? Where are they from? How are they able to get here? We might think we're ready for the answers to those questions, but maybe we're not. You all read the recent comments from Stephen Hawking suggesting that contact with some other intelligence might be something we should really think about because we might end up regretting it. In our NAPS news section tonight on the Coast to Coast website, I've posted a thoughtful essay by a good friend of this program, Whitley Strieber, who I would say has as much to write about disclosure as anyone, since if you believe the accounts he's thrilled us with in his books, he claims to have been face-to-face with this unknown intelligence many times in his life, these beings from somewhere else. And he, too, cautions in this essay that maybe this is not such a good idea for total disclosure. Check it out when you get a moment. Lex and I, Webmaster Lex and I, have several other items of interest there. As you know, the UFO field gets pretty wacky at times. This past Friday was supposed to be a disaster day for the Southwest. Oh, you didn't know that? Oh, yeah, big-time disaster. A ufologist and former psychologist, I think he's a psychologist, his name is Dr. Richard Boylan. He predicted online weeks ago there's going to be this gigantic earthquake registering 9.2 on the Richter scale, that it was going to cause widespread havoc, death, destruction, centered down in Mexico. It was going to affect Mexico, northern Mexico, and the southwestern U.S. Boylan said he got this information, this prediction, from what he calls the Star Kids. Supposedly the children of human-alien interbreeding. And he says he's been working with the Star Kids and that they have these incredible psychic powers. They can see the future. Well, needless to say, the Star Kids were a bit off the mark with this prediction. There was no 9.2 earthquake, no widespread death and destruction. So how does Boylan explain this obvious miss? Well, we're all kind of, the people who are following this story online are kind of holding their breath, wondering what he was going to put out. And here's it. He put out a message online and said, well, you know what? There would have been this gigantic earthquake, but someone else intervened to save us. A race of beings who live in the earth stabilized the earthquake fault and prevented this quake from happening. So that's it. The mole people saved us. Folks, I have told you from time to time, I think it's important to keep an open mind about exotic topics, the kinds of things that we discuss on this program from time to time, but keeping an open mind does not mean you have to be stupid or swallow everything that some knucklehead disgorges online. I mean, common sense goes a long way in this field, as crazy as it gets sometimes. There's a story on the website tonight, for example, about a Las Vegas man who was arrested on an airplane a couple of weeks ago after he tried to enter the cockpit. Apparently, he told people after he was taken into custody he is a space alien, and he basically wanted to take this airplane for a little joyride. Now, should we take his story at face value or apply some common sense to it, that maybe there was something else wrong with him? You know where I fall on that one. Another odd allegation that surfaced recently, and we've got an article on the website, it's about the hit movie Avatar. One writer thinks that this story is really based on the UFO religion known as the Raelian movement, that maybe James Cameron used the Raelians as his inspiration for the Pandorans in the film. And I would think, my first thought after reading this, I would think that if Cameron had used the Raelians as his model, there would have been a lot more sex in the Avatar movie. Because based on what I know about the free-spirited Raelians, and I'm not putting them down in any way, suffice to say, I think this article is likewise baloney, but I thought you might enjoy reading it. A couple of items from the world of science that we posted there. One is a story about a new primate fossil that's been found, but which scientists are unable to classify. They're stumped about where it fits in the family tree, the human tree, the primate tree. And there is another article there about, it's a 17-year-old girl. She has not aged beyond that of a one-year-old. And she's just about old enough to start driving a car, but she looks like an infant, like a one-year-old. She weighs 16 pounds. She's like 30 inches long. Scientists think, though, there's this recessive gene, something in her DNA, that might hold the key to aging for everyone else. And if they could figure out how it is that she is staying so young, why time basically has stood still for this girl, that maybe one day it could work for the rest of us. Slow down the clock. I'm not sure it's going to be fast enough to help me in any regard, but maybe somewhere down the line. Two other stories of note that we posted. One is by a friend of ours, Steve Hammonds, who writes about whether the study of ETs is rightly classified as a scientific mystery or more rightly should be studied by the intelligence community, since it seems to be more of an intel question than a scientific one. And also there is speculation about whether the newly elected Prime Minister of Britain is going to open up classified files on UFOs. The guy's name is David Cameron. He was elected a couple of days ago. Last year, when he was still just a member of the parliament, he said that, he doesn't necessarily believe in all this UFO stuff, but he has an open mind, which is all you could ask for, and that if he were ever elected prime minister, he'd open up anything that he found. You know, we've heard this sort of thing before. We heard our own American president, Jimmy Carter, say that when he was a candidate, that if he were elected, he would open up the files, and then, of course, he didn't. I guess we should give Mr. Cameron the benefit of the doubt. You know, we're not talking about the mundane UFO files already released in Britain that they've been dribbling out over the last couple of years. I'm talking about the good stuff, the secret stuff related to national security, the kind of cases we have here in this country under lock and key somewhere, but which have never been released. In this same vein, the election of Mr. Cameron might be good news for UFO hacker Gary McKinnon. Remember him? We've heard that it looks like McKinnon will now be tried in the UK instead of here in the US. And he's been fighting to accomplish this for a couple of years now. It's become quite a popular cause in Britain. The new government is sympathetic to his position, and its leaders have said they don't want him to be extradited to the US, where he might face 60 years or more, where our government wants to make an example of him because he broke into these poorly protected defense computers. In fact, you know, in my line of thinking and in a lot of yours, this guy did us a favor by showing how vulnerable these computers were. And if this guy could get into them, then certainly the Chinese or the Russians could do the same. But we wanted to put him away and make an example of him. And maybe that's not going to happen now if he has a trial in the UK. Those stories and a lot more on the Coast to Coast website. Check them out when you get a chance. Also in more mainstream news today, the latest on that terrible oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico. Looks like there is some cautious optimism about something that was tried today. BP, the oil company, says it resumed pumping oil to a ship on the surface after a weekend setback that halted efforts to siphon off the crude spewing from a damaged well at the bottom of the Gulf of Mexico. Crews reinserted this tube into the well's riser stack Sunday. This 4-inch pipe is now connected to a ship on the surface, 5,000 feet above the sea floor, and is pumping oil back to the surface. A BP spokesperson said, if successful, this technique is going to capture most of the oil that's pouring out of the well. It's been spewing 210,000 gallons, equivalent to 5,000 barrels of crude every day since the sinking of this platform, Deepwater Horizon, in late April. In terms of containing the flow, this was a positive step forward, a senior VP for BP said. And government officials are saying that they are cautiously optimistic, but they're not willing to say that they've had this thing contained yet. You know, I'm so angry about this spill. I'm sure you are, too. I don't think it's really registering with most of us how bad it really is. We've seen so many stories over the past couple of weeks that, I don't know, it's kind of human nature to glaze over it when we see a new one and kind of tune out a little bit. But it is really bad. The toll is going to be catastrophic for that region. Its coasts, its wildlife, tourism, fisheries, very bad. Lots of blame to go around, too. You know, the companies, BP and Halliburton, all these companies appearing before Congress, all pointing fingers at each other. It's his fault. No, it's his fault. You got Democrats pointing at the Bush administration, at Cheney's energy summit, where BP was supposedly exempted from certain requirements that it uses on offshore drilling all over the world, but it was exempted from using it here. And then we've also read about the Obama administration, how whistleblower warnings about safety problems on this rig and shortcuts that were being taken. This is back in February. The warnings were given and everybody failed to act on them. And we're also told that Obama took a lot of campaign money from BP, as all these major candidates do, taking money from the oil industry. According to one article, lots of blame, lots of finger pointing going around. And meantime, this oil continues to gurgle to the surface, washing up on shore in these huge tar balls the size of softballs. Of course, we need oil, at least for the foreseeable future. But if we're drilling in incredibly sensitive coastal areas like the Gulf, we need to require oil companies to take every step to protect the ocean and the coast and the environment. That is a pretty easy call to make. I'm going to go to the phones right now and see what's on your minds. Let's go to the wild card line, first of all. Who's there?
It's Tim from Houston.
Hey, Tim. How you doing?
Pretty good. How about you tonight?
Okay. What's on your mind?
Well, you know, you were talking about these encounters with meeting aliens and all these other people.
Right.
I was given the opportunity to go view the Roswell craft and the bodies after I turned down a job in the UFO program.
Whoa. Let's slow down here for a second. You turned down a job in what UFO program?
In the United States government UFO program.
Who offered you the job?
A deputy assistant head of the CIA.
When was this?
Well, about 5 or 6 years ago.
Do you remember the guy's name?
I do, but I don't want to give it out on the air.
Okay. So he comes to you. Why would he pick you for this program?
Well, I worked at an airline, and the airline was, I had worked in another magic program before, and therefore I had clearances and all that kind of stuff, and I had left and gone to work for the airlines. I was a squadron commander in this other operation that we were doing, and I just got really sick when Continental started declaring bankruptcies and stealing our retirements and all the stuff that was going on there with Lorenzo, so I kind of put in some feelers into the scientific community, and they offered me a job going as a coming back as a physicist working in the UFO program.
Is that where your training is in physics?
No, I have a master's degree in archaeology and a bachelor's degree in science.
So they hired you as a physicist?
Well, they wanted me to go back and get an advanced degree in physics.
Wow.
And I asked them, I said, why would I want to do that? And they said, what do you mean? And I said, well, 75% of what I'd learn would be incorrect because of information I learned when I was working in the program earlier. And the guy put his hands on his chin and kind of rubbed his chin. He said, yeah, that's about right. But he said, the 20% of the basics are correct. We'll teach you the other 75 or 80% of physics when you get back from getting your degree, and then you can work in the program, and you'll find it very satisfactory. And then I got to realizing that, you know, hey, I hated the life that I was living as a pilot because I was always gone, never had weekends off, always away from my family. And I realized if I was stationed up at Area 51 or S4 or any one of the number of areas, I'd be gone then too. And the money was half what I was making as an airline pilot. So I eventually decided I didn't want to do it. So about 6 months after I turned them down, they called me up and said, we'd like to give you an opportunity to go see the Roswell craft and the bodies. Would you like to do that? And I said, initially, yeah, I'd like to do that. And so they started, said, give us about 2 weeks' notice. And I said, where would we meet? And they told me. And I said, how long will it take to do the tour? And he said, we can do the whole tour in a day. And then something just strange didn't seem right. And so I said, would I have to sign another secrecy agreement? He said, oh, yes, absolutely. And I said, what would be the proposed term of this proposed secrecy agreement? And the answer was 20 years. So what I realized was that the only reason they were doing it was they were going to kill me because I knew too much. And that's why I really recommend to people that they really think twice about doing stuff like this, because the secrecy agreements have provisions in there where they can kill you and every member of your living family without any trials. All the constitutional rights are suspended. They can just come take you away if they think that you've discussed the program. You don't have to have discussed it. They just have to think that you discussed it.
And Tim, tell me this. What did you do for the program before?
I worked in high technology as part of the instructor program in advanced vehicles.
Meaning instructing them how to fly them or instructing someone else?
How to have my people maintain these vehicles. I'd sent my guys down to Area 51 or the ranch, whatever you want to call it, from time to time and all around the world to maintain them.
And were you over there? Were you at 51?
No, I didn't. I never went there myself. I've flown by it about 1,000 times as I went from San Francisco on down towards to Houston. You can see Area 51 off the right side of your aircraft as you pass just north of it. And then if you fly up the corridor up over Boulder, you can see S4 on the way up to San Francisco coming in the southern route.
Hey Tim, Tim in Houston, can you hang on? Because we're going to need to take a break, and we'll
Yeah,
come back. We'll
absolutely.
resume this conversation and hear a little bit more about your experience there. Stay with us, everyone. We'll be talking about the war on drugs at the top of this hour. In the meantime, we'll be taking many of your calls and resume our conversation with Tim from Houston right after this on Coast to Coast AM. We're talking with Tim in Houston, who says that he was read into the UFO program and was invited to join them but turned down the job. We'll resume that conversation and get to many of your phone calls as we can. And then at the top of the hour, the war on drugs, the failed war on drugs, talking it over with Judge Jim Gray about what may be a better approach. Stay with us on Coast to Coast AM. We're talking with Tim in Houston, who says that he worked for a time in the what he calls the UFO program, that had an invitation to go back into it. Tim, you know, I guess my question would be, if you, as you said earlier, that there is a danger that you thought they were going to kill you, that you're being awfully cavalier about talking to us on the national radio show right now about this program.
A lot of time has gone by, and I am never unarmed.
But I mean, it's still a secret, right? It's still what you're saying is still not generally known by the American public.
That's true, but I did not sign a secrecy agreement for it.
Well, I mean, but if you're spilling the secret, you wouldn't think you think these guys are above taking you out because you didn't sign the agreement?
I think they probably wouldn't mess with me because I didn't physically go see the Roswell craft or the bodies.
Here's the thing, you know, over the years, and I'm not saying you're not telling me the truth because you sound pretty reasonable, not crazy or anything, but you know, occasionally over the
Easier,
years,
wouldn't it, if I weren't?
yeah, that's for sure. But people come forward with these stories, and there's no way to verify it. Is there some way to verify any part of this that you're telling me?
Well, sure.
How?
Call the CIA guy.
Well, I mean, the CIA doesn't even confirm people who work for them, let alone somebody who didn't go to work for them. They're going to tell me, yeah, we offered the guy the job in the UFO program and he turned us down?
I think he might. He's a pretty straight guy. He's a former assistant director.
So you would give me his name off the air?
Yeah, sure.
Well, we'll give it a try. And I'll tell you what, Tim, if you leave your name and number and this guy's name with the producer, and I'll give him a call and we'll let people know how that turns out, okay?
Yeah.
And let's stay in touch. I would enjoy talking to you further.
Oh, absolutely.
All right, thank you. What also the wild card line, Galadriel in Washington. Is this Galadriel like in Lord of the Rings, Galadriel?
Oh, kind of, sorta.
Okay.
I spell it differently. George, one of the things I wanted you and the listeners to know about is that the Hopi prophecies, their seventh sign is oil spills in the ocean.
Really, the Hopis had predictions about oil spills in the ocean?
Yes.
Where
It's
where's that written?
Well, if you go to Hopi prophecies, it'll take you to the website, and it gives all of their numerous prophecies. But I've been kind of meditating about sending all of the fish away from that, you know, just sort of like trying to keep them from swimming through it or whatever. But then I came upon this today and I just thought, you know, I haven't heard anybody talking about this. And if the Hopis, you know, we're getting close to the end, according to them.
Well, keep in mind, we've had oil spills for an awfully long time, so I don't know what the end is for the Hopis. You know, I mean, we ha you've got to admit, we've had oil spills a long time, and the end hasn't hit us yet.
That's true. I don't know. I just feel like this is such a catastrophe. And it was interesting to find that in their prophecies today while I was reading it.
Well, I will check that out, Galadriel, and I appreciate you calling. Thank you very much. East of the Rockies, Mike in Mississippi. Hi, Mike. How you doing?
Well, I was waiting for you to start talking about the war on drugs.
That starts at the top of the hour.
I know. I guess they got me in a little bit too early.
Well, you can talk about it. What's on your mind?
Well, I agree with you. I don't even think we've won a battle in the war on drugs since Nixon started it. I was there. You said something about $1 trillion. I think it's a lot more than that if you take all the spare change that went underneath the table.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
I don't even think we won a battle in this war.
You said you were there in the beginning. What did you do?
I was a hippie in the 60s.
Oh, okay. You were on the other side of the war.
Yeah. Yeah, but whatever. You know, I'll tell you the truth, George. I really wasn't a hippie in the 60s. I was an athlete. But one summer, I grew my hair long, and I went to work in a big bar down here in Biloxi, Mississippi, as a cocktail waiter. Turned my life around.
That was probably a fun summer.
Yep. For an old country boy, it was. But I just think this is a waste of money. Marijuana's always been classified as a gateway drug. Does anybody remember Prohibition?
Well, marijuana is one thing, but you have to ask. I don't know if you can ask the same questions about some of these other drugs. Methamphetamine. I have seen this in my own life and in family members and people close to me. It's a really destructive drug. And if you could ever look at a drug that needs to be outlawed, you'd have to say that would be it. But question is, does it work? Does outlawing it work? Clearly, it doesn't. So, Mike, that's sort of the area that we're going to cover later tonight with Judge Jim Gray, and I hope you'll be sticking around. West of the Rockies, Ryan in Washington. Hi, Ryan.
Yes, George. I'm sure you're aware of this, but earlier this week a video was posted on the Internet of a former congressman from the state of New Hampshire. His last name is McElroy, and anyways, he's retiring, and he wanted to get this off his chest, and so he posted a video about witnessing documents while he was working for the Veterans Affairs Committee. And I'm sure you know about this, but talking about witnessing documents that had to do with the meeting, the Eisenhower meeting, to meet with extraterrestrials. Now, for all those skeptics and bunkers out there, they must be getting frustrated because there's been quite a bit of evidence that's coming out over the past couple of years. And if there's any, this is probably the closest we're going to get to disclosure is having an official come out and make this video. And if anybody wants to see it, just to go to YouTube and do brief dives now. I think it's important for everybody to watch it.
Hey, Ryan, tell me this. Was the guy a congressman? Because when I read it and it said a New Hampshire legislator, and that sounded to me like a state assemblyman or something like that as opposed to a congressman.
Yes, he was a state legislator until 2003. He has a voting record available. His voting record is on the official website.
And a state legislator and then a member of Congress, or he just was a state legislator?
State legislator for New Hampshire, but he's a member of the Veterans of the Federal Affairs Committee and the Veterans Affairs Committee. And for some reason, they were cleared to deal with these sort of issues. However, if you do, George, maybe before next week, do a little checking up on this guy and see what you come up with, because you're good at digging into these things anyway.
Well, I'll tell you what, I will, because
people have the right to know that these documents are not all forgeries, and there's official documents that are seen on state panels, but just do a brief dive on YouTube and watch it. It's pretty interesting. So,
well, thank you for the call, and I will check that out, Ryan. In fact, I thought about doing it this week, but it really didn't fit with the general topic of the war on drugs. But I will get into it, and we'll look back at it. I believe that there might be something to that whole Eisenhower story, and I have an open mind about that. When I first saw this YouTube video that you referred to, though, it seemed to me this guy was just a state lawmaker, not a member of Congress. And in that capacity, I can't imagine why he would ever have access to sensitive documents, if they're real sensitive documents of this nature. I can't even imagine as a member of Congress why he would see that on a Veterans Affairs Committee or any other committee. At most, that would be a matter for the intelligence committees. And I doubt that the keepers of the secrets, assuming that those secrets are being kept, would allow members of Congress to see them. So somebody had to have slipped up if, in fact, they were allowed to see those documents and the documents are real, unless it was some sort of a psychological operation or something, or a chance to see how this guy might react. Anyway, I will look into that and see what we can come up with for next week. First-time caller, John in Pennsylvania. Hi, John.
Sir, yeah, the supercharged Pennsylvanian drinking Paul Newman coffee, black. doing drugs in PA. Yeah, no, I'm not picking on you. You were talking about the cartels not wanting the war on drugs to end. It's actually the American drug companies, American liquor, American tobacco. You know, Pfizer, Anheuser-Busch, Miller Brewing, just, you know, name them. They're the main proponents in the, Partnership for Drug-Free America. Yeah, that's who funds it.
Well, I can't argue with you there. I can't argue with you. I think that the these pill companies that have made pain pills such a major addictive substance, and you find them in every medicine cabinet in the country, and people strung out on pain pills and getting way more than they ever would need for a root canal or back pain or whatever, I've got to believe that they would not like, for example, to see marijuana legalized. That's for sure.
The war on drugs is one of the main engines of the Wall Street economy. They've got to keep that thing illegal to keep the whole thing going. If you legalize drugs or just simply decriminalize, it would have such a massive effect on Wall Street it wouldn't even be funny. So you got the other thing is you got all these guys, you know, Pfizer, Philip Morris, Anheuser-Busch. They kick all this money back to all these crook congressmen. So they've got all kinds of money to spend.
Well, certainly the drug companies give a lot of money to members of Congress and presidential candidates, and so do the brewers. You're absolutely right, John. I appreciate the call, and we'll be getting into that subject in great detail with Judge Jim Gray coming up in just about 15 minutes. We're going to go to our other wild card line, Scott in Utah. Scott, what's on your mind? Oh, there's no Scott in Utah? Okay. Gina, let's see, Travis in West Milford, New Jersey.
Hello, George.
Hey, Travis, how you doing?
I've never had the pleasure of speaking with you. I've talked to Mr. Nori, but it's great to finally get to talk to you. I had something to say. Your caller, Galadriel, was it? I had read something, too, about Hopi prophecies before, or maybe seen it on History Channel or something, how they said in the end of times, cobwebs will cover the skies. And I thought that was kind of funny due to all the recent chemtrail, you know, all the talk of that. I just, something that I wanted to say was when I'm 21 years old, and growing up, I did see contrails. And I'm from Louisiana, by the way. I saw contrails, and, you know, they, depending on the atmosphere, they dissipate a couple of minutes or so. And down there now, I mean, I started seeing a few of those lines that would stay up there for, I want to say, an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours. I moved up here to the Northeast, and I see them over West Milford all the time. And, I mean, they just crisscross, and they stay up there for so long. And it kind of freaks me out. I mean, I never really knew about this kind of stuff.
Well, I know that it's been discussed on this program many times. I hosted a show where we had sort of a roundtable on contrails, or if you want to call them that, chemtrails. And I don't know what to make of them. I'm like you. I used to remember seeing them as a much younger person, and just not as often as we see them now. I'm unconvinced that these are chemicals so far. Not that I'm not open to that possibility. Not that I wouldn't put it past some government agency to pull something like that, whatever the goals of it are, the program might be. But the evidence so far is pretty sketchy that I know of. Chemical analysis of the samples, people claiming that they see contrails and they get sick. I think the link between those two events are pretty weak. And most importantly, we don't have any whistleblowers come forward to say, hey, I worked in that program, I loaded the tanks, I was involved in it, and the government's poisoning us. So I'm very interested in it, Travis, as you are. I hope that we get more information about it. But as yet, I'm unconvinced that it's an evil, diabolical plot. Wildcard line Bob in Eagle Rock, California. How you doing, Bob?
I'm doing well. Yourself?
Okay. What's on your mind?
On this drug business, I had a suggestion. What we ought to do is what's been very successful on the tobacco industry. I mean, when I was growing up, 60-70% of people smoked. And what they did is used advertising to convince people not to do it. Hey, it worked. So what you do is go ahead and legalize the drugs and use half of the income for you know, professional TV ads and stuff against it. And while they're at it, go ahead and do the same thing for alcohol. Why don't we go ahead and finish up what the Volstead Act couldn't do? Use advertising to say how bad this stuff is.
Well, I know there are some ads. There is some advertising campaigns about saying no to drugs, and the, you know, that famous ad of the frying egg, and but I guess it doesn't come close to offsetting the public's fascination and appetite for these kind of things. That's a good idea. Maybe what happened also with tobacco is they taxed the heck out of it. They kept taxing and taxing and taxing it to the point of, I think, a pack of cigarettes probably cost $8 or $9 now.
That was part of it, but the other part was that they used real advertising agency rather than public service. Public service are basically, you know, these are nonsense. They're not real professionals. You have to have real professional ad agencies who are very effective in their ads. And if you do that for both make drugs legal, use half for the government, God knows the government needs it, and use the other half for advertising, real advertising, not public service notices. Those are nonsense. I mean, they're worthless. That's what they did with the cigarettes, and it worked. And I mean, how many people, what percentage smoke now? I think it's 15%, something like that.
Yeah, good idea, Bob. I'll tell you what, I'll raise that with our guest, Judge Jim Gray, who's coming up here in just a matter of minutes. Thanks for the call. Tried to get a couple more in. Annie in Alabama, are you there, Annie?
Yes, thank you very much. I have 8 ideas to stop the leak, 2 ideas to contain it, and 1 idea to prevent another one, and that's to make sure that there's no more offshore drilling, because there's no way to 100% guarantee that there's not going to be a spill, a methane gas explosion, or a terrorist act. And this should be investigated to see if there's any possibility it could have been a terrorist act. And my ideas to stop the leak is, I think we should try, first of all, a giant Tesla coil, a particle beam weapon, particle accelerator, a small neutron bomb, maybe even a miniature atom bomb.
Whoa, 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 whoa. Annie, a small neutron bomb out there in the ocean?
It would take a lot of heat. I mean, sand won't hold a seal, and you've got to actually pave it over.
How about a neutron bomb that makes the hole, blows the hole open bigger?
Well, you've got to pave it over. You've got to make a glass parking lot out of it. Sand is not going to hold any kind of steel with any kind of silicone or anything.
Okay. All right.
How about a magnetic cap? I think a magnetic cap might help.
Do we have a magnetic cap that we can put down there at the bottom of the ocean?
I stuff it full of magnets, the oil well, and I would, if it's made of metal, if it's made of metal, you wouldn't have to do that. Just cap it with a big magnet. But you could put stuff in it that would swell when it gets wet, and it would go in, but it won't go out.
Well, that's all very interesting ideas, Annie. Thank you for the call. I appreciate it. One more call to get in real quick. International line, Marie in Toronto. Hi, Marie. How you doing?
Hi, George.
Better make it a quick one.
Yeah, last as usual. I try to email you on your producer through AOL, and the only way I can seem to talk to anybody is by sending them a fax. Is there any way I could get a fax number after?
If you want to hang on to the phone line here, I'll have Gina, our producer, talk to you about that. Thanks for the call, Marie, and thanks to all the callers. Coming up, Judge Jim Gray to talk about the war on drugs. Stay with us on Coast to Coast AM.